No, it just takes a couple minutes for this thing to go. Okay, we're on again now.
So this time, Jack Balch, Julian Hamilton, William Morrow, and myself, Jack Balch. We went to California. I think I made a mistake in that date of 62. It was more like June instead of Christmas. So we went out and talked with some of Conroy's investors. Then it was Jay Overholster, and a guy named Mr. Humiston, who was design engineer for the cryogenic system on the S4 stage, who was one of the few millionaire engineers you run into. Mm-hmm. And Jay Overholster, who had investments. Las Vegas was there, and there was one other gentleman that I can't remember. He was sort of a silent partner. I guess it's Lee Mansdorf. One thing's got to be said about Lee Mansdorf. He had everything so that if the airplane went, he'd make a mint. If it folded, he'd still make a mint. He believed in really hedging his bets. But those three, more or less, went on kind of the money to finish his endeavor. And one of the first things was to know this Mr. Humiston was really a gentleman. One of the first things he said he wanted to do was to get Conroy's house out of hock so that he could stop having problems and things that were going on with this kind of...
How do you spell this next guy's name now?
Humiston? I don't know who it was. It was Humiston, Howe, and I may or may not be... Howe is the Howe that has Navajo truck. I may can find there the spelling to it. Just write it down and we'll look it up later.
Okay.
So like I said, this was sometime between June and Christmas. Sometime around between Christmas of 61 and June 60. Because in September of 62, the pregnant Guppy, Boeing 377 Stratocruiser, took off from Van Nuys Airport, flew up to Mojave Desert, where we Then the flight test came after the maiden flight. This is where we really had problems.
Before we get to that, I heard one story that when Conroy had flown to Huntsville, that Heimberg or somebody wanted to do some load tests, and so they really filled the airplane up with gas when Von Braun was on it.
No.
That's what, okay.
FAA requested a load test to test out the structures.
still had those wooden timbers in it, though.
Yeah. Well, the wooden timbers here was just to load up these four structures. This was prior to going to Edmonds for the flank test. I started mentioning before that we went to Edwards and got Edwards involved. So I went in and I was sent up as a measly NASA peon to talk with Jack Boggs, to talk with Paul Bickle, the director of Edwards NASA Research Center, Flight Research Center. So I went in and explained our problem. Dr. Von Braun, I guess, had already written him a letter and explained some of the problems we were running into. So he called all of his people together and called in one guy by the name of Bill Gray, who had been a FAA, chief of FAA flight tests prior to going to work for Douglas and doing a little flight test work, freelance flight test work on his own. He did the Purdue flight test of their flying TV station, relay station. So he had then sent to come back to work for NASA, and he was assigned to the project as knowing the ins and outs of FAA and things of this nature. And one of the things to show you the way people felt about Dr. Von Braun, he's in the missile business. He gets all the money from the NASA budget. Mr. Bickle gets whatever crumbs is left over, but he, Bickle was quite an avid airplane fan. He gave me a couple of examples of him modifying his glider, and he helped the national record for time aloft in gliders for a long time. Anyway, he says, whatever Vornup wants, we'll give it to him, even if we have to certify the airplane and say to hell with FAA. So that was a little incident there. So then Bill Gray came on the scene and started advising me and letting me know where Conroy was trying to undercut and take shortcuts, which I would go to the FAA and say, watch that shanty Irishman. I don't believe this is right. Are you looking at this? Are you looking? And the FAA was rather reluctant at that time because they're one agency that's liable, that I know of, that's liable by law for any of the engineering decisions. The man that approves something, structures, systems, anything in the FAA, if that's not right, and they have a crash or an accident, he pays himself with time in prison. Can't be proven that he, some change was made or something he didn't approve. So he's held liable by law, and CAB and Congress gives CAB the power to put that guy on the spot. I guess that's the reason FAA was, they were reluctant to talk with NASA at this time. They said, okay, anything, it's got to come through Conroy, because Conroy is the applicant for the certificate. Kept saying, look, and the people from headquarters kept telling FAA headquarters, stay on this, because this is a momentous thing, something that's never been done. So we went through quite a hairy, plane actually performed as Conroy predicted. He said it would perform better than the original Stratocruiser. Be more responsive by adding the 70 inches after the wing, at the field splice, after the trailing edge of the wing, which it did. But there was still some concern of the wash off the bubble onto the hypnotic section. There was always contentions that you would wash out in certain angles of attack, certain roll angles, one of your horizontal stabilizers, which would give you trouble. But we went through all this testing. And Conroy was smarter than I guess a lot of people give him credit for. He sold the FAA, only checking those things that were critical, which at that time, Bill Gray and I guess, still had our doubts that the damn thing would fly. And figured that if it does, great, if it don't, great. And we really had no control on the flight test of the thing. Whatever he sold FAA would do, we had to buy it, because that was Siemens. Siemens directed that he had it certified, we'd buy it, we'd use it, consider the use of it. And, but anyway, it was rather a hectic thing trying to, for Bill Gray's advice, trying to force Conroy to do more than what he had contracted to do with the FAA to get a certificate. But through a little coercion here, a little coercion there, one of the big things, I guess, that we had is Conroy had a guy by the name of Sandy Friesner, who was, and I do want to spell his name. Sandy was an instrumentation man that had done a considerable amount of submarine instrumentation work, oil rigs, you name it, he's done it if it's been needed to be instrumented. And so Sandy was one of Conroy's close friends, and sort of thought it was great to a citizen to go out and try to do such a stupid thing as he was doing. So, and he was the only one that would consider the instrumentation job on this thing. So Friesner is Sandy, F-R-I-E. Z-N-E-R.
Yeah, excuse me, I just know I got another, unfortunately, interview coming up on the hour, which is really unfortunate because I'm really enjoying this. I,
we fed all, when McNamara started C-5A, we fed him information on the government. He did his cost effect analysis. Came up with an airplane that was less than the Guppy because of some of the structural loads and some of the other things. But we actually fed him information on his airplane. But we had two airplanes.
Turned out to be pretty successful, didn't it?
All it has its limitations, just like the pipe of the Cessnas, the 707, and everything else. I think that's where the people in the space business don't understand, don't know, is the fact that they try to strive too much for perfection, because they're in the unforgiving environment. But in the airplane business, you're in a pretty forgiving environment out
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
Good about that, and I didn't know him at that time.
Uh-huh.
So he could have been out there. I got thinking about that yesterday. So he could have been out there, and I didn't know him at that time.
I was wondering.
Yeah. What I was giving you. Working on it at that time, but he could have been out observing the flight or something, I don't know, just knew the personally involved in it at that time.
Did Carl Heimberg's test lab have a lot to do with the Guppy?
Carl Heimberg?
Yeah.
I would say Carl Heimberg probably was the man here at Marshall that pushed it through, and more or less so Von Braun and upper management here. Because we was all, everybody that was worked on the Guppy from the beginning worked for Carl Heimberg. All of the development of the Guppies was handled out of Heimberg's shop because he had what they call the lab responsibility for special transportation. Heimberg's outfit handled all the barges and did all the design work, modifying Saturn stages, did all the design work and design review of the contractor's work for modifying the Guppies.
This is up to 63 anyway.
No, this is up to the Super Guppy foot.
No.
PM, John Goodrum's outfit, PM, more or less, we turned the soup of the pregnant Guppy over to PM, which was formed in 63-64. It was called Industrial Operations at that time.
Yeah.
To John Goodrum's outfit, well, it wasn't John Goodrum's outfit then. I guess it was, nobody had been designated at that time. Turned it over to, well, that's I.O. to handle the operations. Heimberg's out to handle all the technical design, special equipment requirements for Marshall and that particular
responsibility.
Where did we get
to
yesterday?
There's something I wanted to ask you a little bit more about too. That was that McNamara used Guppy information for C5 cost analysis.
Yeah, what we did, there was a guy at NASA headquarters who was in transportation. There was two of them. It was Earl Barr and
Stan Smolensky. Is that who you're thinking
of? No, not Smolensky. I'm talking about the transportation people that we interfaced with.
Okay.
At headquarters, Earl Barr and Jim McCullough. Interface directly with. And according to Earl Barr, was DOD's directly contacted him. And as we developed information and everything, we more or less fed it into headquarters, who in turn gave it to DOD.
What kind of information were they using?
We fed them wind tunnel data, copies of all the reports, design reports and everything, and requirements for volumetric type airplanes to carry volume loads. And we fed them with wind tunnel data, flight test data, and quite a just anything they wanted or were interested in. We sent copies of this data to Earl Barr headquarters, who in turn gave it to DOD.
You mentioned the pregnant Guppy. There was some concern about the airflow and the empennage.
Yeah.
Would that have been all of C5 has a fairly good...
Well, C5 has a very high tail.
Thing, yeah.
It was just, at that time, the C5A, they were trying to determine the actual diameter, let's say they considered the optimum diameter for C5A, and it fluctuated anywhere from the diameter of this pregnant Guppy to the present diameter, which is about 12 or 13 foot high, and some Guppy, the C5A has a, it's not a real drastic figure, upside down figure eight shape like the pregnant Guppy and the Stratocruisers. But anyway, this all of this information we were able to get, everything was given back to headquarters, who in turn passed it on to the Department of Defense to assist them. Cost-effect analysis to determine the actual diameter of the C5A, which in turn they wound up with an airplane that's just like the 141. It's good for carrying steel rails, tanks, concrete blocks, and sacks of cement. But if you want to really carry a volume, such as the S4B or the S4 stage, Titan begin to get because of their upper structure. You know, when the bubble comes up in the crew compartment of C5A, you begin to run into height problems.
Do you remember any particular difficulties or any incidents that occurred during the operation of the first pregnant Guppy? Thinking of that picture you showed me the other day, what was it, Ellsberg Air Force Base you said that was? Where the tail took off or something like that?
No, it was Ellington.
Ellington.
Yeah, we had, the pregnant Guppy was always had, was very limited due to the 4360 engine. I mean, it was, the engines were the limiting factor. Anytime you lost an engine on takeoff, you had to start looking for a damn place to land real quick.
Yeah.
Because the glide of it was so like a glide of most of your jets. When you get
yeah.
And, one thing I was going to really talking about flight tests is going to brought up this guy, Sandy Friesen. So Conroy, in order to make this damn airplane work, had to go in and clip about 6 or 8 inches off the end of the props.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. All
right. He predicted that from his non-engineering, swinging a mass as you do a propeller. From his knowledge of just basic fundamental flying knowledge of airplanes, propellers, and helicopters, that swinging this mass of some length arm at some CG location, if you started chopping it off, it reduces stresses in this blade, these propeller blades.
Yeah.
And some of the original history behind that C-97 was a hollow derail blade they had. The Air Force had used one of those things.
What kind of blade?
They call it derail. It's an aluminum hollow casting.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
So some of the big problems they had on the C-97 was that the blade would separate.
Mm-hmm.
And caused considerable problem and loss of airplanes like they had on the C-133. So Conroy's idea was that he had to have 8 inches to clear the fuselage. So he just said, we're going to cut the damn blades off and go, because any nut, I'm not even an engineer, I can figure it out that it's going to reduce the stresses in this blade. But the commercial version was a steel blade, which was much better than the Air Force blade on this particular airplane. So we cut the they cut the tips off this blade and had this guy, Sandy Friesen, to instrument it. Sure enough, Sandy Friesen's instrumentation says the stress is reduced by a certain level, a certain percentage. Well, FAA has a real funny way of operating. I guess they have to operate this way. This is fine and good. But before we'll accept it and certify it, have to have the original ham standing people do the stress survey. And I think this cost Conroy some $40,000 and upset him to no end, because you can set out on the end of a runway, and what you do is you set out and run that plane through numerous sequences of flying conditions on the ground to determine the stresses, you know, build up stresses in the blade, leave it off, pull them up again. And, commercial outfits, built airplanes, burn out 3 and 4 engines sitting out there to get all this data that you need to for the prop manufacturer needs to justify the FAA making these changes, because it was certified to a certain length. And when you start making changes like Conroy was making to the airplane and to the props, you got to justify all this to FAA. It's up to the applicant to prove to them beyond a shadow of a doubt this in no way endangers the crew, cargo, the people on the ground. So, like I was telling you, we took the airplane and very limited spare parts.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't even carry oil up there, because Conroy had checked in with some of his Air Force cronies at Edwards that the particular oil that is needed for the Guppy was a bunch of surplus up at Edwards, so we just used Air Force oil. It was a giveaway type thing.
Yeah.
And we used Air Force gas, about 8, 7, 3 cents a gallon, something like that. So when we got up and the FAA finally made their thing that, okay, you've got to run the stress survey on this prop, Conroy went through the overhead, and he and I had some very rough altercations there, and finally I told him, okay, fine, I'm going to back up and go home, and I'll just tell Marshall that you're not going to do what it's required by FAA. And so finally Conroy blew his stack and says, okay, go ahead and do it. Burn up the damn airplane. So we ran the survey, and sure enough, it's Sandy Friesen's previous instrumentation predicted strain gauges and so on. They did reduce the stresses in this blade. Well, Ham Standard thought this was so great, they suggested to Conroy, hey, go cut off the tips of the outboard propellers. Because they cut it off from a rounded tip and squared it off.
Yeah.
And Conroy says, hell, I can't afford another prop survey. I ain't even got a NASA contract yet. To hell with you. So then we had some different flight tests, and I think where you mentioned to you about water for ballast in there. So when you're going through flight tests, you've got to do various CG locations. And the way you do this is by ballasting water tanks.
Mm-hmm.
You go up, you're ready to fly all morning, and at Edwards we take off at about 4:35 o'clock. Well, space did, kind of what people did, they came up with a water ballast system. So it was the day it was going up, was checking for flutter. And so we had Sandy Friesen and Bill Cuff was on the system, worked out. And, I don't believe it was Jack Podesky. Bob DiAgostino was flight engineer. So they went up and did their various CG locations. By ballasting out